Thank you for joining me for episode 24 of The Mark of a Druid. I do suggest you start the story at the beginning, and if you'd like more information about me, the author, Rhonda R. Carpenter, by all means, go to my websites, rhondacarpenter.com or themarkofadruid.com. Now, on to our story. Chapter 35, The Gathering, Part 2. Andrea watched Richard's fitful sleep. There were prescriptions to be filled, but how could she leave him to do that? Decision firmly made, she left the room and lifted the receiver, quickly pushing in Tom's number. Richard's father answered. Obviously, she'd roused him from a deep sleep.
Hello?
Tom, it's Andrea. Guilt rushed over her. Richard, she stopped and tried to think of how she was actually going to tell him.
What? What's wrong?
His voice almost squeaked. He was burned. He's okay, she quickly added.
How?
On the stove. She truly knew no more than that and rushed on. He burned his forearm. The ER doctor said it was a second-degree burn, and he may need a skin graft.
Is he in the hospital?
His words were hesitant. No, they sent him home. He's sleeping, but I need to get some medication before he wakes up.
I'll be right there.
Thanks, Tom. Andrea hung up the phone, but had to keep herself busy. She wandered into the kitchen and stood in front of the stove. She just didn't get it. Richard was always so careful. He'd been cooking since he was about 9. She ran her fingers over the knobs. The funny thing was, they were all off. That struck her as odd. She hadn't even checked them when she'd found him standing there. He had had enough forethought to turn off the burner, but not to keep from being burned. It just didn't make sense. Within 20 minutes, Tom McMurray, dressed in wrinkled sweats, with his brown hair going in several directions, knocked at Andrea's door. Come in, Tom. Andrea met his questioning brown eyes. She waved him in. He's sleeping in my room. They watched their son for a few minutes. And after Tom had stroked Richard's cheek and planted a light kiss there, they slipped out of the room together.
Well, he looks pretty comfortable. What did they prescribe? Tom asked.
Andrea handed him the prescriptions, and he looked them over. So, an antibiotic and pain meds.
Is your pharmacy 24 hours?
Yeah, it's on the corner. That way. Here's the insurance card. I guess they have it on file, but take it just in case.
You know, Andrea, I can see it on your face. You're exhausted.
I'll do anything for you and Richard.
Do you want me to stay?
I'll get the medication and sack out on the couch.
No need. I'll need you to take him on Tuesday, and maybe Wednesday, if I can't clean up my schedule.
Not a problem. I'll pick him up Tuesday morning. Be right back.
He hugged her, patted her like she was a friend or an aunt, not an ex-wife. Andrea was grateful for his support and counted herself as one of the lucky few. Divorce had not destroyed their relationship, but had enhanced it. The first minute she had had to consider settled around her like an anchor tossed overboard. She landed heavily on the couch.
What were we doing before the burn?
Sleeping, right?
No, it wasn't sleep exactly. It felt like a trance, like we were being led somewhere.
Her mind searched for details, but came up with no solid remembrances. The last thing she recalled was Richard turning on the stereo. She unconsciously reached for the remote and pushed the play button. A flute's lamenting melody filled the room. Andrea fought an uncomfortable urge to lie down. She reached for a blanket which rested on the back of the sofa, but it never made it over her. The room lurched, then evaporated. One unrecognizable word rang in her mind.
Remember.
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 Remember, echoed. Athene's eyes fluttered open and adjusted to the dimness of the tent. A shiver ran the length of her body. What was it she needed to recall? She did not know. Athene heard Alian turn over in her sleep. Her sister's breathing was soft and even. Dubjila's familiar snore was not present. She must still be at the council, Athene thought. Athene wondered what had awakened her. A child's cry caught her attention. She carefully rose and slipped quietly past Alian. The campfire still burned, sending flickering embers into the early dawn sky. There was no one to be seen. The child's cries subsided. Athene lifted her face to the stars. This had not been the easiest day of her life. She had played no part in the ceremony. It was forbidden for her to deliver the flames of Beltane to her clan. Davith had put an end to any chance of honor when he raped her. The thought of him sickened her, and she shoved his image out of her mind. She'd watched the festivities, never out in front, yet never fully removed from the clans. When Allian was summoned to the council, Athene retired to camp. She dreamily looked into the flames. "Mom, can't you see me?" The voice was young, and from what she could tell, male. She searched in all directions, but saw no one. Fear creeped over her. "Where am I?" a frightened, disembodied voice murmured. "I do not know," Athene stated plainly. "I cannot see you, but I'm right in front of you." The only thing in front of her was the fire. She squinted into it. Orange and blue flames danced together as if intertwined in an unbreakable embrace. Then, through the flames, there appeared a shadowy figure. It seemed to her strangely dressed, a young boy who was not solid, there but not. His expression was sorrowful. She wanted to help him, to care for him, to mother him. It was a strange feeling. "Are you unwell?" Athene moved toward the boy. His image flickered like a firefly. Who are you?" the boy stuttered. "My name is Athene of the White Hair. I am the daughter of Cnut." She was about to give her full title, but the anguish in the boy's hazel eyes weakened her knees. He was dressed in strange garb, but something more rankled her mind. She wanted to comfort him. "What is your name?" Athene kept her voice soft and non-threatening. "Richard." He wiped his nose on a striped sleeve. "McMurray. Richard McMurray." He tried to make it sound formal. Athene smiled and reached for his hand. Richard pulled back. "I will not hurt you, Richard." She smiled sweetly, folding her hands in her lap as she sat down opposite him. "Which clan are you from?" Richard looked confused. "Clan? I'm from California." Tears trickled down his sweet face, but did not fall. "I want to go home." Athene reached out to the boy, but her fingers slipped through him. A puzzled look crossed her face. Athene shifted and uncomfortably inspected her own hand by rubbing her thumb over her fingertips. She knew she should be afraid, but there was something about him. "You are not from here, are ye?" Richard looked around. "Who is she?" He pointed over Athene's shoulder. She followed his finger. Allian stepped out of the shadows, her auburn hair, a tangle of curls, was tussled by an unfelt wind. It surrounded her unnaturally pale face. Her haunting emerald eyes sparkled as if they were twinkling stars. Allian, like the boy, was not in physical form. Athene turned to Richard. Athene knew her sister's body was still in the tent. She was walking in dreams. Long ago, Athene had grown accustomed to her sister's spirit roaming at night. "This is my sister, Allian of the Red Hair, druidess of the clan of the Standing Stones." Her introduction waned as she wondered if the boy understood her rank. "She is a spirit walker." Allian's eyes locked with Richard's. "You are in great danger. The longer you stay here, the more you must endure upon the return to your body." "Endure?" the boy asked. "She's come to help you, Richard." Athene tried to soothe the boy in an effort to counter Allian's directness. Athene did not understand her sister's need to be so churlish. Her superior behavior, in Athene's opinion, was Allian's greatest fault. She thought she knew everything, and she needed to prove it. The problem was that she was at least half right, most of the time. "You are not in your time. Your spirit has left your body, and you must return to it. In this form, spirits can be lost forever. If that happens, the body dies." Richard's wide-eyed gaze stabbed at Athene's heart. "Allian, what must he do?" "It is not what he must do. It is what you must do. You are the reason he is here." Athene gaped at her sister. "Me? I cannot walk in spirit." "With my help, you can. Do you want to help the boy, or don't you?" A wave of emotion writhed in her stomach. She nodded. Richard watched the exchange between the women. "You must listen to me closely and do what I tell you. You must come to an agreement."
"What sort of agreement?" Richard asked.
"Your souls are intertwined in the great spiral pattern. I can see the strands of connection stretched taut with the strain of this ill-timed meeting. Yes, yes, it's too much too soon." "The last," she said, as if talking to herself.
"Very well, Alion. What do I do?" Athene asked.
"You must make the agreement, which will guarantee that your souls meet again, so the pattern is not disturbed. Then Richard must seal his spirit back into his body with fire. He must hurry so his injuries will not be too great."
"I do not wish to hurt him," Athene said.
"Maybe you can prevent his pain when you meet again. For now, he must go back to his body." Alion turned her attention to Richard. "Do you understand?" He nodded his comprehension. Athene stood. Alion held a misty hand near her sister's temple and did the same to Richard's with the other hand. A circle of light formed and connected the three of them. Richard shook, and Athene comforted him.
"I'm so sorry, my son. In another time, will you choose me as your mother? For I shall choose you as my son. I will take care of you to my dying breath.
I will have you as a mom, and your name will be Andrea." The words seem to speak themselves. "The bargain is struck, Richard. Your body is close." Alion's voice quavered.
"Richard, you must seal your soul back into its body. The only way to do this is to sear the skin. A burn. Here," she said with emphasis.
Richard's spirit slipped into his body, as Athene's did into hers. Alion held the bond between them firmly.
"My son, hold your arm to the flames."
Athene felt the flames as if her own flesh were burning. Athene's scream folded in on her, enveloping her. She was standing at the fire. Her arms ached, but when she looked, it was not burned. She thought,
"My son, Richard."
Alion was nowhere to be seen. Tears freely streamed down Athene's face. People were coming from the great stone circle, rushing in her direction. Athene turned to escape into the forest, but her feet were instantly rooted to the ground. Perig stepped from behind the tree, his dirk gleaming in his hand, and he moved toward her at a trot. She could not move. Her pulse raced. Wide-eyed, Athene watched the filthy, squatting pig of a man come closer. Her physical senses heightened. She could smell his rage, or perhaps his unclean body. Even though he was running, she felt like everything was taking too long to happen. She took in every detail of him, from the festering sores on his face to the dull haze flickering in the muddy brown of his eyes. Athene could sense his desperation, his need for revenge. She knew if she died in the next moment, someday she would be reborn. She would be Richard's mother. Somehow, this thought comforted her. Athene could hear Perig's chest heaving, but even worse, she could smell his breath, the bitter, rank stench of death. She knew that smell. A midnight black wolf leapt over the fire, front paws hitting her attacker in the chest, sharp white fangs bared as the wolf attacked, giving the man not a moment's respite. The snarling wolf bit Perig in the face and neck. Blood flew in all directions. The wolf and Perig struggled. He tried to protect his face. Unyielding incisors shredded his forearms, and Perig's screams echoed around Athene. The dirk in the man's hand flailed violently. The wolf yelped, but did not give up its attack. The crowd surrounded Athene. The wolf's eyes flashed golden as he clamped his jaws tightly around Perig's throat, viciously shaking its head. The wolf tore Perig's windpipe away, leaving a gaping hole. Perig's body stopped struggling. The fight had shredded his clothing and exposed the brand on his chest, which stood out in the dim light of morning. The elders lifted white hoods to obscure their identities. They circled the wolf and closed in on the animal. Amber eyes darted wildly from druid to druid. Matted fur dripped gore onto the ground. Athene's stomach heaved. A wall of white blocked her from view. Alion's hands clutched at Athene through the crowd, but Athene, still entrenched, refused to yield her position. When the elder's circle broke, the wolf was gone, Perig's head lulled to one side, while four men picked up his body and carried it away. Dubjila accompanied the high druid of the warrior clan, Arthfiel. He sheltered a tall, thick-shouldered young man. Arthfiel draped a woolen brat over him. It dragged the ground, but she thought she saw bare feet. Athene craned to see his face, but he was led away toward the council's tents, and the elders fell into step behind the trio. Andrea sat up. Her head felt like it was packed with cotton. It was my fault. I'm so sorry, my son. I'll never let you be hurt again, I swear it. Chapter 36, Treachery and Devotion. David was an extremely frustrated but excited man. This woman drove him crazy. Shivering with anticipation at what was to come, he stroked himself. He pretended it was her hand, her fingers, her touch. He had to have Samantha, at any cost. David wasn't sure why he followed her commands. It was as if there was no other choice. Eyes closed. His mind flickered over her image. A gasp escaped his lips, and David brought himself to climax. He laid there, panting, then rose to shower as his queen had commanded. Samantha was sprawled on silk sheets. One twig-like finger beckoned David to her. "You," she said, voice as inflexible as an iceberg, "start here." Her perfectly manicured toe lightly ran the length of his cheek, languishing at his chin. David eagerly took it between his lips. A tingling ripple ran over Samantha's body. "Yes," she hissed. "My pet." David nibbled at her ankles. Hot breath blew across her moist skin. She orchestrated his every move, her neck arched and strawberry blonde hair writhing about the pillow. Creamy, ample hips swayed with increasing rapidness. She tangled her fingers in David's hair, forcing his head down. Between each spasm, she saw David watch her wide-eyed and licking his lips like a hungry animal. But he no longer touched her. Samantha sat up and reached for him. "You've done well." Her open palm connected with his face. The resounding slap stung his right cheek. A reminder of how to please your queen. She laid back down and reached for him again. He kneeled between her legs, obviously more than ready. She pulled him down onto her by the back of his neck. He was unable to hold back, then collapsed on top of her. Samantha scoffed and pushed him off of her. She left the loft without giving him a second glance and went straight to the bar. The small refrigerator held a glass pitcher of martinis. She filled the silver shaker with ice, then poured the mixture and capped the lid. One hand rolled the shaker in circles with a tad too much vigor. Ice tapped metal. Her other hand snatched two glasses. "Useless slave. From my hand will be your death," she said in Gaelic. Full peach-colored lips curled into a brutal smirk. Anger multiplied like a deadly virus eating up her common sense, leaving only insanity in its wake. She filled the glasses. Samantha seized the wooden box from beneath the bar. The lid was inlaid with a blood-red crest. Three golden lions poised, ready to strike, stared back at her. Her finger ran over the white hindquarters of one of them, and she spoke in Gaelic again. "I am the queen." She uncorked a small clay bottle. and tipped several black crystals into the full glass. The alcohol dissolved them on impact. David stood at the top of the stairs, taking in every word and every movement. He'd been ready to run to her and apologize on his knees if necessary, but now he echoed her words, "Useless slave, from my hand will be your death." James slumped on the sofa, his head in his hands, face covered. Lori watched her fiancé. She searched the inner knowing that had guided her for so long, but there were no images or glimmers of knowing. When she focused on him, all she could see or feel was hurt and betrayed. The man had proposed to her less than a week ago, and he'd done the unthinkable. "James, look at me," her voice shook. When he lifted his gaze to meet hers, his eyes shimmered with tears. There was a gnawing feeling in her gut. "Did you or did you not proposition Jessica Phillips this afternoon?" "Honestly, Lori, I don't remember anything after..." He broke off, uncertainty cascading through his features. "Let's take this one step at a time." Calm, cool reasoning swept over her. "After you left here last night, what did you do?" Her eyes traveled his face. His aura pulsated. She pulled at his energy and willed the truth from his higher self. There was a long silence, but she waited patiently.
"I drove home, but I couldn't sleep."
"Then what happened?"
"I don't know. Everything is missing. I don't remember."
He ran his hands through his hair. "Well, try. Why couldn't you sleep?"
I was excited about the Agner confirmation. The research paper was shimmering in my mind.
"Did you get up to write?"
I was thinking about starting, but it was late, and I got..." His voice trailed off into a whisper.
"Music. I heard music."
His head dropped.
"Music?
I can't get the fuzz out of my head." His fist tightened in his lap.
Lori's left hand touched one fist, and the marquee stone sparkled up into James's line of sight.
"Lori, I would never..."
He lifted his gaze to meet hers. "While I may not know what happened, I'm sure. I don't want anyone but you." His umber eyes flickered with shiny black specks, pleading for her understanding.
"This accusation has to be some kind of mistake."
She knew this man better than she knew her own parents. He would never do what he was accused of. There was something deeply wrong. So she wanted to believe him, but she refused to let this go without trying to find out what had really happened in that office.
"Why don't we try to jog your memory?"
Lisa released his fist and walked toward the entertainment center, scanning the tapes. She guessed it didn't matter which tape she chose. Her fingers fumbled over the cassettes. A yellow post-it note snagged her attention. "Check out the music, instrumental," it said.
"This one,"
she muttered, slipping the tape from its case and dropping it into the player.
"James, if you listen to some music, it just might help you remember. Lay down, put your head in my lap."
She sat beside him and, in that moment, felt compassion for him. He did as she asked. Lori's fingers played in James's hair. She turned the volume up with the remote and started the cassette. The speakers whistled a mournful tune, a flute solo, she thought. In moments, the tune shifted to a violin, adding a strong, low tone to its melody. Her eyes closed. Just before she drifted into a deep cavern of nothingness, she whispered,
"James, try to remember."
Dabjila remembered staring into her twin sister's face. Pale blue eyes met pale blue eyes. She knew it was unlikely she would ever see Brosna again. The ship was loaded, and Arok, with the babe in her arms, waited for her on board. Brosna pulled an apple-sized sky stone from her pocket, a lovely light blue sphere striped with creamy white crystals rested in Brosna's hand. She kneeled, holding the gem with both hands. Then she brought it down on a sharp rock with a fierce swing. It cracked. She slammed it down again, and it split in two. Brosna stood,
solemnly and shifted one of the pieces into Dubjila's palm. The stone vibrated in her hand and emitted a hum she faintly heard. "These will strengthen our connection. When you think on me, place it upon your brow. You will hear my thoughts and I yours." Tears wet her cheeks. "I shall miss your face," she laughed softly. "Then go to the water barrel and look in. You shall see me looking back, sister." Colors swirled about Dubjila, then merged and faded one into another, creating a curtain of black. She sat in the dark. The fire had long since died. She held the smooth, half-round sky stone, turning it in her hands. She felt its energy. She tilted her chin to the ceiling and breathed deeply. She placed the flat side of the sky stone onto her forehead, as she had done countless times before on the full moon. "Brosna," she called with her mind. "I am here, sister. Is Alion well?" "She is healthy," Dubjila frowned. "Has she been told?" "Yes, and I believe she will accept the truth. She's walking in the wood." "Alone?" "The wolf protects her. A fine man, that one. I must share unpleasant news. Kanut has sent a messenger. He has arranged a marriage. Athene is to marry a Welshman. The man is twice her age and has the face of a boar." "This cannot be allowed. She must be reunited with Alion," Brosna stated plainly. "We have the spring and two full moons to thwart his plans. But the man is to come here on Midsummer's Eve. By then, we must see her safely away from here." "Alion, should she be told?" Brosna asked. "She would never stay if she knew." "No, this is not the time. Sister, I warn you, if she discovers on her own, she will not forgive you, not now that she knows the truth of who she is," Dubjila warned. The swirl of amber light seemed to carry Dubjila toward the stars. She wore white robes and listened to Arthfiel, Matok, and Xavier speak with Adam. "Who was he?" Adam asked swiftly while Xavier cleansed the blood from his face and chest. "Perig was his name," Dubjila stated flatly from the shadows. Adam glared at the old crone. He snapped, "And you know this how? He and another, Davith, were banished from our village." "She speaks the truth." "This was not his first attack on Athene of the White Hair," Arthfiel interjected. Is he dead?" Adam bowed his head remorsefully, knowing the answer. He still tasted the man's blood, a foul tang of death. A deep laugh came from Matok's throat. "Dead? My boy, you ripped his windpipe from his throat. Do you think he lived?" "I killed him." Adam's eyes misted. "And he prayed as I did." Adam shook his head, promising never to forget this Perig. "You saved the girl," Xavier's voice thundered. "And I fear you will have to save her yet again." Ambivalence wavered on Adam's face and quickly turned rank. "I am tired of prophecy and prediction. Tell me no more." His hand slapped his thigh with a crack. "I will do what I must, when I must. But I do not want to be told what is to happen before need be. Keep your vague predictions to yourself." Xavier's upper lip quivered, barely preventing a scowl, but he held his tongue. Samantha gracefully sashayed up the stairs, all innocent sweetness. David sat on the edge of the bed, head down. She tipped the glass under his nose, and he backed away. "Here, love, drink this." Her smile was so captivating, so alluring. He took the glass from her hand without thought. "To us," she said, lifting her glass. A twinge of caution spun through him. He lifted his glass and smashed it into hers. Shards flew. A crack ran up the side of the fine crystal stemware. The martini sloshed onto Samantha and then onto the floor. "You clumsy fool," she screeched. "Get out! Get out!" David
didn't have to be told twice. He rose and sprinted to the living room, struggled into his pants, and headed out the door with only one thought. What have I done? James stirred while in deep trance. His mind rejected the images before him. He knew this was not his current life. It seemed like he was watching a movie in a theater, but he also understood the inner workings of the other man, Peregg. James felt pity for him. The young man was an outcast, but he did not lose all by just his own hand. Peregg had long since blamed his wretchedness on Davith. The more James focused on Peregg and what it was to be like him, the more he slipped into the vastness of Peregg's regrets. James became an unspoken observer, simply along for the ride within Peregg's body. Peregg growled at Davith.
I will not harm her again. Are you afraid, big man?
Davith chided.
Afraid? What more can they take from me? I have no family, no home, no life. I will have my revenge on the little bitch. She will die by my hand on this night.
Davith unsheathed his knife and slashed at Peregg.
Son of a sow.
Peregg drew his dirk and stabbed at Davith, catching him in the ribs, but left only a shallow wound. Davith ran for the forest's edge. Peregg trailed him an arm's length behind. Lunging forward, Peregg grabbed Davith's shirt. He knew he would never win in hand-to-hand against Davith. He used his weight to sling him to the ground and race past him. Knife still in his hand, he broke free of the trees and bolted toward Athene of the White Hair. His lips parted to call out a warning, but a snarling black wolf landed with all four paws on his chest. He stabbed at the beast. The wolf bit and clawed, protecting Athene. Peregg knew he would die, and yet he fended off the animal. Fur flew, clothing shredded along with flesh. Peregg prayed to the gods for the first time. Please, help me die with honor. I vow to serve the clan of the Standing Stones forever, a humble servant, a devoted follower. Wild amber eyes flashed. Peregg's arm, torn open by long incisors, lost its strength, and his hand released the dirk. Cernunnos, Lord of the Wild Things, I would choose to love the old crone truly from my heart if this pain could only end. Peregg begged. Hooded white figures surrounded him. Sharp fangs closed on his throat. James flew from the couch, panting and wheezing, his eyes frantically searching the room for the wolf. Lori's chin lulled against her chest. He knew her for Dubjila. Fear ran through him. Would she know him for Peregg? She stirred. His breath caught. The tape shut off. He spun and looked at the stereo. The scowl deepened, and he growled.
The tape.
Lori opened her eyes. James backed away from her. Her face was regretful. I should have never doubted you, James. Can you forgive me? She didn't know how she knew, but she was certain he had not betrayed their commitment to each other.
Forgive you?
He was still feeling all of what was exposed of Peregg. He thought, if she knows who I am, how can she love me today? Things were all mixed up in his head. Yes, I forgive you. A tickling at his mind made him turn away. You know, the tape stopped just as I, woke up. He took the tape from the player. Where did you get this?
David gave it to me.
I'd like to say thank you to all my listeners. Please come back and see me again next week if you have questions about the Mark of a Druid, or you'd like to know more about me, the author. Please go to my websites at themarkofadruid.com or rondacarpenter.com. Until next time, take care.